Welcome to Thinking Reimagined.
Thinking Reimagined is a unique platform for thoughts-provoking intergenerational dialogue
in a diverse and inclusive setting with a focus on impactful change
in the global workplace and community.
Our stakeholders' conversations aim to spark thought,
leadership,
curiosity,
engagement,
collaboration, and learning
amongst individuals, teams, and beyond.
Enjoy this episode. And subscribe to Thinking Reimagined on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and other outlets. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to another episode of Thinking Reimagined. Today's an exciting topic as we look at inclusive economies. And one that is very important when you look at the global situation. And today we're joined by the usual crew, my co-host, Nifemi. Hello, Nifemi, how are you?
Hi, Dr. Ama. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. And of course, our co-producer, Peter Amand Boyo. We have guests today, Stanley, the online banker, and one of my co-founders from Africa Sustainable Trade, Yinka Oyekoke. Let's delve into this topic, because for an economy to be inclusive, it has to be sustainable and stable. And today we're joined by, as I said, the co-founder, one of the co-founders of Africa Sustainable Trade, and of course, Stanley, the online banker. I have to tell you, Stanley, when I said it, seeing your reels, I just love it. Calm down, because Stanley really is educating people on the financials and making it real and applicable, but approachable, and they can actually get bite-sized information that is useful. And that is very critical if you're creating an inclusive economy, because you can't have an inclusive economy if you don't have diversity. And if you look at the diversity around, not everyone is a university graduate or a secondary school graduate. So having bite-sized information really brought down to a basic understanding is so critical. So Stanley, I have to say, I love the reels. I love watching them. And you make it approachable and digestible information for people to latch onto, particularly with all the turmoil that's going on around us, not just on the African continent, but globally. Anyone who really wants to understand the basics can listen to that. But most importantly, we all have to, like Stanley says, calm down. It's all going to get better, but we're going to grow with it. So Nifemi, what's on your mind today as we get started with this conversation?
Online banker, what can I see your head swearing up like? Why is it? All right, welcome.
Dr. Ama has watched me in Nigerian terms. She has watched me very well.
All right, welcome again, everyone, to the Thinking Reimagined podcast. So I'd like to begin with the SDG timeline for eradicating extreme poverty, which is very ambitious. We are barely 7 years away. I think it was Dr. Ama that mentioned in the previous episode that it wasn't realistic. But one thing that is certain is that economic inclusion is critical on our way to achieving that goal. And like you've heard, that's exactly what we're talking about in this episode, creating inclusive participation in the economy. So let me quickly just intimate you with our speakers on this episode. Entrepreneur, sustainable trade advocate, communications expert, and coach, Yinka Oyekoke is also co-founder of the Africa Sustainable Trade. Thank you for joining us on this podcast. Stanley Onora is the one whose head is swelling right now. My banker has also joined us live. Financial advisor who's passionate about small businesses, fintech, and the economy. Stanley is popular on social media for, you know, his creative way of empowering people, like Dr. Ama said, with financial knowledge and impactful information. Dr. Ama is an entrepreneur, educationist, behavioral consultant, and resilience coach. She's the immediate past chairperson of the British Business Group Nigeria, and she currently chairs Africa Sustainable Trade, which she co-founds. Peter Amand Boyle is an actor and filmmaker and he's also a co-producer of the Thinking Reimagined. So welcome, everyone. Dr. Ahmad, they say that women constitute 60% of the poorest people in Nigeria out of the 87 million people living in extreme poverty. We're told that 62 million of them are women. Perhaps we should begin by finding out what you would say are the major limitations to an inclusive economy in this regard.
You know, Nifemi, that's a very powerful question. And because we're a global broadcast, you know, we probably should pop in also that this is representative beyond the shores of Nigeria. Wherever you go, you're going to find that there's a disparity in terms of the accessibility of women to financial instruments, but also to the ability to get decent work or to be promoted. And it all has to do with some cultural things, absolutely, but also the limitations and the biases that exist. The thing about an inclusive economy, having an inclusive economy for it to thrive, is that it must include everyone, regardless of your gender, regardless of your religion or your ethnicity, regardless of your sexual orientation. Until you can have that, where there's diversity and a recognition that the value that everyone brings, whether you're a farmer, whether you're the dustbin picker, whether you're the street cleaner, everyone is participating in the economy. So it goes to decent work, it goes to pay, it goes to access to financials, it goes to education, health, all of those things. Interestingly, that you started with the SDG, because SDG 8, if I recall, speaks about decent work and economic growth, and it really emphasizes the importance of sustainability. If you don't have diversity, you cannot have an inclusive economy. If you don't have sustainability and stability, it will not thrive, it will collapse. And the resilience of an economy is based on everyone having the opportunity for work and participation on all levels. So for women on the African continent, Asia, name it, wherever you are, there's some common strands that run through. We need to continue to address those issues that limit women, whether it's education, whether it's early marriage, whether it's poor health, whether it's unequal pay, because women and men sometimes have the same jobs, but they're not being paid equally. That is an issue. And let's keep in mind that almost 70% of this economy in terms of spending is done by women and youth. And we must include the youth in our conversation for decent work to occur, for inclusive economy to thrive. You have to include youth, because they are the future, but more importantly, they're the ones who are driving the economy, whether in terms of earning, in terms of spending, and you have to look at both of those. So that is my brief summation for now. And I'm sure with Stanley's hand on his head, he's thinking of something. So as an entrepreneur, and who has been very creative in the way you do things, join the conversation, share with us.
Thanks. You know, some of the highlights that you mentioned about the youth and women, for something that I'm particularly about the youth, I think I fall into that demographic. I'm not so far away from people in their 20s, and I'm not so far away from people in their 40s. So I'm in the middle. What I've come to understand over the years is that the participation of the youth and women over time has its great benefit to every country, to every nation, because they form the building block. They are the ones that replace the aging workforce. They are the ones, and the women, there's a common saying in Nigeria, and I think around the world, that if you train a woman, you've trained a village, you've trained a household. So the participation of women in an economy is critical. One of the things that I realized, having worked in the commercial banks, is that if you were to check statistically, women do better even with their finances once they are empowered. And we noticed that the rate of default of loans given to women is, so women pay back their loans almost 3-4 times better than men. So a woman that is given access to finance, for example, will try her best at whatever cost, even when it's not convenient for her to make sure that her loans are repaid. And it's statistically proven. And some people, some finance houses in Nigeria and around the world have taken it as their own unique selling point, as just that's what they are known for, that they lend to women. And that has a multiplier effect on the economy. And as we are talking about sustainability and we're talking about inclusion, including women and youth, like you mentioned, is something that is non-negotiable. It's something that is non-negotiable. Because if you're empowering people, if you're empowering the youth, they are the ones that are energetic, number one. They are the ones that are most innovative. They are flexible. The things that I might not even think of, somebody that is 18 is thinking of a creative way of doing it. And, you know, it passes the message across. Like, I share some of my information the way that I share it. I started sharing it thinking it was, you know, it was quirky in a sense, because it was a bit of trying to be funny while still passing the message. But it resonated with a lot more people. And that's a creative way that has even opened channels for certain people to even try to, you know, pass on information. And still it adds up. It adds up to the economy, adds up to what everyone is trying to achieve, which is, how does information get across to people? How do people benefit? Are people getting value from this thing that you are doing? And in all, if we then have the participation of the youth and women overall, like you mentioned, it's one of the goals that we're trying to, one of the SDG goals that we're trying to meet up with. It's non-negotiable. Women and youth have a lot to play in it.
Absolutely. Let's bring in Mr. Adekoke into this conversation. With economic inclusion, we're talking about the creation of an economy where every member of the society, regardless of the background, can participate in and, you know, benefit from economic activities. I'm just wondering how inclusive the economic climate is in the UK where you are, assuming that it's better than over here in Africa. What do you think that community got better in an instance?
Well, thank you again for having me, Nifemi. It's always a pleasure to be invited back. That means I may have said something interesting, but I think that this very podcast that we're on, Stanley, I watched a couple of your episodes, and what struck me is that we can all get into Netflix and binge on Netflix, right? And I've always said, the key would be, how do we get edutainment, right? So how do we get education from entertainment? Probably whoever comes up with that, and you're on the path, because I was watching some of your wonderful reels, and they were entertaining, but yet educational. I can imagine that there was one that I can imagine there were people that were having problems with their bank and not realizing that actually the problem was with the deal they had made, right? And they're expecting their bank to jump in the bin and stop this transaction. And I thought that is ultimately what inclusion is, right? We can't move forward if we leave somebody behind. The most efficient organization on any planet is perhaps the army or the military, right? And they all military have a simple goal, which is, we don't leave anyone behind. It's inclusive, right? The UK is certainly getting better, to answer your question directly, all right? But the UK has gone through generations and generations of understanding that you can put the metrics, and the metrics show, again, as Stanley said, the metrics show that I lived in the UAE in Dubai for ages, and they had specific women-only financial products, right? They performed better, okay? So when we start to get to understand that, understanding is layered with ultimately communication. Communication is layered with knowledge. Knowledge is then layered with understanding what Nifemi's frame of reference is, where Stanley's frame of reference is, where Dr. Armour's frame of reference, where Peter's frame of reference is, then we truly are able to achieve whatever goal we set our minds to. And I think for a long time, that's what has been holding us back. Where we know today that sustainability, diversity, and inclusion are not just tick boxes. They actually are good business for people, for the planet, and so on and so forth.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the encouragement, by the way. I appreciate the feedback, Andy.
Yes, no, absolutely. Please keep doing what you're doing, because it you know, a lot of times problems, you know, I mean, my hat is communications, right? And I always say that communications is not about what is being delivered, it's about how it's being received.
Sure.
So whatever I'm saying right now is being received differently because there are different people on this podcast and audience, right? So the real trick with communication is, how do I communicate so that most people can have the same thread of understanding? Yes. So it's not even about language alone. It's about, so when I was watching your episodes, I thought, you know what, you're explaining something that could be a huge frustration for people, because once you understand the other point of view, aha happens. And most misunderstandings are based on, I thought you said this, I thought you meant this, but you're my bank, you're meant to protect me. Right? It's my money. I'm working with you. Yes, I am protecting you. But however, you've done a deal with somebody and we can't jump in. We can't get in that. So at for us, Africa Sustainable Trade really is set up. And I always say that, you know, if we could use one word, it's about collaboration. It's we're advocating for collaboration and inclusivity, because across the value chain, from the farmer to the shelves in Tesco's, is one of our initiatives. We need everybody in that value chain, in that supply chain, connected and singing from the same hymn sheet for the common goal that we're trying to push. So ultimately, yeah, I think that once we can foster that collaboration through understanding, through inclusion, then we're on our way.
Thank you so much. I still have so many questions that I'm going to ask like much later, but that would be...
You know, one of the things that I just want to go back to something that Stanley had mentioned, which was intergenerational economy. And I think that's really vital, because we have to remember that through that, there's a continuation of information. There's a continuation of value throughout that system. So I did think that was very important. And thank you for bringing it up, because very often, you know, we think that people should retire and go away, but there is a gift and a value in having the generations working together. One of the things about this podcast is intergenerational. And if we can continue to harness that, then you're going to have generations learning from each other. I'm learning a lot about technology. You know, 30 years ago when I was doing my PhD, we didn't have this kind of system. You know, it wasn't possible. I remember 30, 40, I'm not going to give away my age. Stop it, everyone staring. But I remember when computers just started and you had to, you know, you sit in a computer room and you churn out the information and then you have to go somewhere else to go and collect your printed copy. You don't have that anymore. So that generational conversation and recognition that there is value in knowledge and transferring that knowledge, but also in picking up new ways of doing things, I find that is most important. But the question I want to ask you is, how do we go about having this inclusive economy? Because we've talked about the youth, we talked about including women, but there's many factors that are necessary to create that infrastructure for it to be viable.
I can't harp enough that It for me, the secret lies in collaboration. The problems we face is misunderstanding, miscommunication. The problems we face are not having both sides or all sides understanding. The problems we are trying to solve, Africa Sustainable Trade, are really breaking down the silos. There's some wonderful work going on across the globe. There's some wonderful... Africa holds 30% of the world resources. So if we're looking to facts, right? Africa holds 30% of world resources. Africa holds in less than, by the end of this decade, Africa will hold the youngest population on the planet. We know that technology is driving us. We know that technology allows us to communicate. So if we have the youngest population on the planet, we know that that's going to move things. So for me, I think that as long as we can keep having these conversations to really bring the policymakers, the entrepreneurs, the young people, the NGOs, the small scale farmers, you know, breaking down the silos, like I said, ensuring that everyone's voice is heard ultimately. With the advent of AI, we now have that real possibility, because ultimately AI breaks data down. So 7-8 billion people on the planet, everyone can actually have a voice. And where we excel, that Bill Gates understands that, that's why he was in Nigeria. The CEO of ChatGPT understands that, that's why they were in Nigeria. Where we excel automatically is share numbers. And then we have the youth population. As soon as we start with a full understanding, and then we, you know, and I often talk about, you know, Peter asked me last time about trade, young people, how do they fit in? And I said, well, Afrobeats is trade, because the 5-year-old in Siberia is into Afrobeats. He now wants to start connecting by technology. And then eventually he wants to go to Nigeria, wants to go to Ghana and see his Afrobeat artist. That all is inclusivity. So for me, I think that ultimately increasing our inclusivity and making sure everyone's voice is heard is where we start, and what we must continue for progress.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I've had a couple of thoughts. You know, you mentioned intergenerational collaboration. There is the thought alongside the need to, you know, collaborate and also learn one or two things. But I want us to just explore the financial education angle to it. You know, I think it was Mr. Adigoke who was talking about Stanley's effort in edutainment and things like that. How well would you say that that form of business and financial education is structured? And this is tailored to you, Stanley. For instance, in Nigeria here, I've interacted with people in Ladipo market, you know, Igbos in trade fair who do business in their billions of naira. And these individuals never went to school, at least not the kind of education that we pride ourselves in, the masters, you know, the Harvard and what have you, and the kind of money they command. I mean, even the elite do not have them. Don't you think that we're missing out big time if we are not, you know, if we are not exploring that expertise, the kind of the model that they adopt or they have adopted over the years? And how do we, you know, begin to structure them in such a way that it can help youth entrepreneurship in this part of the world?
So I'm going to take up from where Andy mentioned and, you know, where Dr. Ama and what she said. So one of the things that's one of the major things when you talk about inclusion that I would say is a barrier is one, lowering the barrier to entry. I would say lowering the barrier to entry. And when you lower the barrier to entry, just like every other thing in life, it flows. So it's easier to go downstream than to go upstream. So water flows from a mountain, from a hill down, it's easier. Gravity just helps it pull. And as opposed to you trying to pump water up the hill. So barrier to entry. And when you talk of barrier to entry, what are the ways that you can limit, you can lower barrier to entry? Number one is information. So you have the information, and the information could be structured either formally or not formally, like informally. So like you mentioned, like the guys in Ladipo that trade, they have education. They are well educated. Well, the system of education that they passed through was informal. So in the Igbo culture, you have the things that they call boy, or you call apprenticeship, or you call master, whichever language that you call it, is a structured form. And this education lasts minimum of about 7 years. So you're trained under a person for about 7 years. So take the formal education that we have. If it was the person going to a university, that is equivalent to a first degree a master's, and even a PhD in certain situations. So it means that this person has graduated from a full course of study on a particular, on just a particular trait. And this is not so, and they are very niched. That's another aspect that we do not look at. So they are very niched. So if you're talking of, say, banking, this person has taken banking. Not just that the person took banking, the person took customer relations and only majored in customer relations. So I'll go down again down to the example. So you have the market, you come down to Ladipo market, and everyone is trading spare parts. But this person has decided that the spare parts I'm going to trade in is Mercedes spare parts. So he has learned that the Mercedes spare parts that comes from Germany is pricier than the ones that China will produce for me. But they have similar specifications. And depending on what the Nigerian market needs, and what the people in Cotonou need, and what the person in Cameroon needs, I know how those people are wired. So if I had to buy something from China, the person in Cameroon will not take it. Even if the price is higher, he will prefer a part from Germany. And that way, over time, 3, 4, 5 years, he has built the customer service. He knows how those people relate. He understands the books. He understands the markets. He understands the swing in trade. And these are the barriers that we're talking about when we talk about inclusion. So by the time this has been lowered, due to access to information, access to that education, that is the way that we can talk about inclusion. Now, we will take that to the general public. Now, Nigeria, we're living in a place where we have I don't know what the current statistics is, but over 20 million children out of school. Now, the government keeps waiting to have a formal education for these kids. And they negate the fact that the people around them can educate these kids on certain subjects that will still be beneficial to the economy as a whole. So while we are lowering that barrier, so you have kiosks, you have people that are trading in different goods, just a small scale market or whatever it is. And then we'll have children that are begging around those places. Why don't they encourage the idea of bringing these people into apprenticeship? Okay, I'm just selling vegetables. But why don't you, instead of you standing on the road, learn how to sell vegetables? Vegetables are readily, you can even find the way that this boy can pick it up. It's something that you can plant in your garden or something that can be planted somewhere around or that you can pick up from somewhere. And then the person has a skill, the person has a knowledge, even if it's not grand knowledge on how to sell houses or how to sell aeroplanes or how to go on Zoom calls like this, but has the knowledge of how to sell vegetables. And that vegetable sale that the person has picked, the person invariably has learned customer service, has learned marketing, has learned, those are the ways that we call it when we mention formal education, because we know what they are, but those are the skills that you pick up when you learn a trade. And by lowering this and bringing people into this formal sector, into these informal sectors, we are going to achieve this that we're looking at inclusion, not necessarily waiting to build classrooms, not necessarily waiting to have high-tech education, not necessarily waiting to have something that is grand, but the very lower barriers. By the time we lower those barriers, we achieve what we're planning. And then that still comes down to like the idea that I have, or talk about like education and, you know, making it fun. So I have like a series that, you know, I hope to come up with where, you know, you go swimming and while people are dancing, like I have products that I want to sell for like dance, where people are dancing, you know, you are vibing to a particular song and then you relate it to like, you know, sales. That way the person stays entertained and you still get, so lowering that barrier is still very important. So that's my own idea.
This is the Thinking Reimagined podcast, sponsored by Allied Empowerment. Allied Empowerment Consultancy offers leadership and innovation through bespoke human development solutions, brain-based leadership, and coaching. Allied Empowerment empowers business leaders, teams, and individuals to intentionally accentuate desired outcomes built on trust, curiosity, psychological safety, engagement, and communication. Allied Empowerment, thriving in a sustainable and valued manner.
May I just emphasize what Stanley has said? Because what he's referencing is what we call in education, informal, formal, and non-formal. Informal is what he's speaking of, the apprenticeship. They are learning, and it is going to give them job security, but also they're learning the rudiments of that business. Because for them to go through a system, a formal system, when they don't have the funding, is very challenging. But it's a very viable, option, and one that should be enhanced and duplicated. It is duplicated in certain areas, but not to a wider range. My other concern is that vocational colleges, universities, polytechnics, many of those are being converted into four-year universities, when in actual fact, not everyone is seeking a four-year degree or ready for that kind of a commitment. We're not all going to be doctors, lawyers, and engineers and nurses, but we can be very good at the craft or the vocation that we select. And that again allows us to create jobs, to create services and goods that we then are able to trade with others. It's about commerce. Non-formal education is what you learn from your parents, from your community. And I do believe that one of the things, or one of the key aspects of inclusive economies, is the retainership, the holding on to those cultural aspects that make it unique. What Stanley just spoke about is a cultural aspect within a specific ethnic group, and that should be amplified. You know, if we're waiting to put everybody into school in a situation where economically it's not possible, then we're doing a disservice. And what we need to think about very quickly is, how do I make it possible for an individual to learn skills, not education, because skills are important, that will enable them to participate in the economy? Absolutely critical. And we need to heighten that. And it's one of the reasons why Africa Sustainable Trade is keen to make sure that we create ecosystems, nexuses, so to speak, where information, participation, financial opportunities really sit down to the community level, to the school level. And even in formal education, we have to take the time to make sure that people are learning job skills. If they cannot participate, if they cannot engage, if they cannot collaborate, even at the school level, how are they going to go out? So, Stanley, I hope that part of your financial education plan includes taking it to the schools. They need to understand what it means to be economically viable.
I agree that it's important that we begin to rethink the whole concept of education the way we know it. And because I have seen a pattern over the years where people go to school here in Nigeria, and after spending 4, 5, or 6 years in school, they now go to learn a trade or acquire a skill. They do makeup, they open makeup businesses. I'm telling you, graduates leave school and then they now go and learn a trade from someone who did not go to school to be able to establish themselves. I mean, it is an anathema. There is something terribly wrong. That means we are possibly not even focusing on empowerment. We're just about, you know, getting degrees and things like that. I don't know, Mr. Oyugoke, if you have a thought along this line before we explore some other angles.
Yeah, thank you. I think that one of the reasons we had to set Africa Sustainable Trade up is that Africa is completely, in fact, even the fact that we call it Africa, right, there's a misconception, or there's the narrative that we have to change. Africa is 55 different countries, right? It's got a completely different socioeconomic background or demographic than the rest of the world, all right? The education system needs to be open and radical, needs to be completely different. Africa is made up of 99%, if not even small to medium-sized enterprises, but micro small to medium-sized enterprises. So if we continue on the narrative that you've got to go to school, you've got to get a degree, you've got to go to Harvard, all we're doing is we're breeding people who are going to end up out of the country, right, or out of the continent, because that's where they serve best, right? the model that Stanley described, right, is exactly why we need that ecosystem to show. Because if Africa is made up of 99% micro small enterprises, then if I'm in Africa, is it useful? Is it more useful for me to get a degree, right, in biology, or is it more useful for me to spend 3 years, 1 year even, with somebody who's trading, who's making billions, right, who can then empower, right? You know, the answer is obvious, but we're still built in, and that's where we have to do the unlearning and also look at, are we looking at global sustainability versus Africa? What models are we using? Should we actually be promoting our own culture? What works for us? And then look at how we connect with the global sustainability.
And while we're at that, we must address something you touched on, you know, briefly about exporting people outside the continent. You look at this Zoom meeting right now, you know, many of you crisscross UK and Nigeria 1,001 times a day. Online banker might be on his way out of Nigeria as well. There are many who are leaving this country. Interestingly, a friend of mine who left for Canada earlier this year, no, I think it was late last year, sent me just minutes before this podcast, sent me a video of the new house he got in Canada. It was so beautiful. But you know, not everybody has, it's so beautiful. Not everybody has that experience. I also have friends who left for the UK who are back in Nigeria. You know, in fact, this couple didn't spend up to 3 months. I mean, they just woke up and said, this place is not working for us. We're coming back to Nigeria. So I want us to quickly address that because we have a couple of people here who do business in the United Kingdom. Talk to us about what we're not getting right. What's responsible for the outright exclusion of certain groups from opportunities that exist in these other countries? You know, some young Nigerians just cannot participate actively and profitably in that economy. What is wrong?
I have my views. Great, 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 great question. I think first of all, it's the narrative. I think first of all, it's looking at the dynamic. Online banker isn't going to leave. He's going to do well in Nigeria, right? He's going to do well in Africa. I tell you why, because he's understood the dynamic, right? And he's serving the market there, right? The education that he's doing, or the education turned entertainment or merged with, is serving the continent, because the micro small businesses that have problems with their banks, he was a banker, so he understands the disconnect, and he's connecting, right? Most people always look at, we have the obvious saying that the grass is always greener. We know that it never is in reality, right? They're educated, 100 times more educated than myself, Nigerians in the UK, and they are driving cabs and they're cleaning, right? Because all they're looking for is an opportunity to make some money, right? We need to look back into the likes of the online banker who've created a model that served the community, right? And not look at the models. And this is why education plays a huge part. And we need to be open and radical, because we have 1 billion people to serve, right? We need to make half a kobo, right? Half a dollar from 1% of that community. Everybody else would be in awe of that market. So us looking out and expecting that there's a better life in Canada, and as you rightly say, Nifemi, your friend in Canada is one and few far between that actually have come and managed to get this wonderful house. And actually, if you peel back, you have no idea what the real story is, okay? The reality is the grass is not greener. I'm privy to be see both sides of the coin, all right? But if you're looking at sheer just numbers, Stanley will confirm as a banker, right? And you don't need to know as a banker that it's based on numbers. If I'm serving 1 million people and I get 0.5% of 1 million people versus 1 billion people, It's a mindset. We have to look inwards and say, how can we provide a product or service that serves our home?
If I could just add to that very quickly. Oh, sorry, Stanley. I'm just going to make a small point because Yinka really hyped on something that's so important. Very often what people are thinking about is the pursuit of money. We need money. But what we really need to focus on is optimizing the goods and services so that other people, rather than us going out, people are coming in to invest in what is being created on the continent. It's not about going to get what is outside the continent, but creating what is available here, optimizing it, and bringing others to invest to help develop it. Is very critical. So it's a change in mindset, is a change in the narrative. You know, we watch so many videos, people are watching videos, people are looking at your friend who's got this house in Canada. They haven't asked, how are you paying for it? What do you need to do to have that house? What does it mean to have that house? The house looks gorgeous, but guess what? If you don't make your payments and you default, they will take that house from you and you're back to square one or even below that. So it is not about the perception, but really about what does it take to move forward. So eradicating poverty is important because then you can make a generational shift in how they look at a better life economically, educationally. And so it has to be incremental. You can't just wake up and say, I'm going away and I'm leaving, I'm going to Japa, you know, so I can go to the US and I'm going to get a house. That's a fallacy. Very rare, but if you manage to do it, what is the price you're willing to pay? Well, why don't you stay where you are and begin to build on what is available to you and create that opportunity? So optimizing the goods and services, beginning to look at what is attainable. There's so much creativity in this country. I mean, you can't throw away anything and not pick it up and say, well, I can use this or recycle this to do something else. That's ingenuity. It's ingenuity. It is amazing how innovative people are on this continent, but it's people infusing funds, opening up the financial instruments, investing in each other that will enable others to come back and invest. Asia did not become 30% intra-trade without them taking a look at what the situation was and deciding that they can trade amongst themselves. So why aren't we doing the same thing over here on this continent? Look within yourselves and see how you can build it up rather than looking outward as to what is available there. And I've got to get that for myself. You can get it and do it right here. It may just take time and then we move forward. Yes, Stanley, you were going to say something.
I want to weigh in very quickly, but between you and me, you're not leaving Africa, right?
Just to start off, I'm not leaving Africa. So I have like the opportunity. I've had the opportunity not once, not twice, and I've been very stubborn with my belief and with Africa. I'm grateful, you know. I'm grateful to God that some of the work that I started a long time ago, you know, is getting recognized. So it's fulfilling for me, you know, and it just shows me that the potentials are still there. And when I tell my friends, and I would just sort of quickly get back to you, statistically, it's proven that the easiest place for you to get rich is your home country. Statistically, the easiest place, the most possible for you to gain wealth and gain sustainable wealth for you is in your home country. So the people that are outside that eventually do make it and make it are outliers. And, you know, they are not the norm. If you and I were to go to Poland, you know, and we start to make off a very good living, well, I looked at us like, oh, wow, these guys are just came in. You know, they feel like you're an outlier. Why, what are these people even doing differently from us locals that have been here? Well, if you make it in Lagos or in Abuja, this guy is part of us, so he's just hustled and made his way, you know, and it's normal there. You don't feel like fish out of water. So that's one side that we can look at. And like just like what Andy said, and I would like to look at the continent of Africa. And I see what we're trying to do, and I see the opportunities. Burna Boy, who I like to use music because that is what is most referenced by the youth. because that is one of the success stories that they can look up to and do believe in. And you have a number of those people coming out every day, breaking into the ranks, and then becoming global superstars. They are not just local superstars, they are becoming global superstars. They did not go off, they did not start from America. They did not start off from the UK. These people started off somewhere in Wizkid, was from Ojolegba all the way shortly between him and Shita. Rema started off in Benin City, going to clubs in Benin City. And he had his first trip there because he had been recognized across Africa and then across the world. And we have so many of those cases, those use cases. Hopefully, by grace of God, someday we're going to see online bankers started off somewhere in Nigeria and then transcended into the rest of Africa and all. And those are the stories that we could tell and to make people believe, because this belief is with us. And that is still the access to information. I'm very, very, I don't know. I have an insane optimism about Africa. And, you know, I have, my Wi-Fi password is Africa. You know, most of my destiny is named Africa because I see the opportunities. I'm saying that this is a place where you can start off something and you are green. You are the only one that will do it for like 10 years before people come to learn from you. You don't have that opportunity. This amateur. So if you look at businesses, so they are growing, they are businesses are in stages. So you have matured, you have the intermediate, and then you have the infants, ones that are still growing. The places that you can make it the most are those places where, you know, the businesses that are not fully mature, those ones still have potential for growth. Their potential for growth is still exponential. But at matured businesses, the ones that are like the economies that are fully developed, what new structures are you bringing into the UK? You have to take an already existing idea and probably tweak it. But here you can create already new concepts for wealth. And then it's for people that are willing to do it, I think it's more profitable and it's more profitable for you. Because we have the Lebanese, we have the Chinese coming into Nigeria to come and run businesses. I'll use a classic example. The Indomie noodles that we eat, for example, by the Tolerum Group, they've been here since the 80s and they were fighting it off up till like the 2000s. When they exploded exponentially. Now they took a bet further into Nigeria to go and develop the Lekki Free Trade Zone, the free trade ports. And they are taking a bet on Nigeria's future, sinking, they've sunk over $500 million into that project, and they are going to sink in more. And they are taking a bet on Nigeria's future when we Nigerians are going to take a bet on, you know, cleaning tables, and, you know, doing menial jobs in other places where we can't take a bet on our future. But I'm taking a bet on Africa, and I believe in Africa. So I feel like that's like a long way for us to go.
I am too, and everybody is nodding along as you were talking. Peter Amadboyo, I'd like to hear from you right now, because, you know, when people see your posts online, you're in UK, and then you come back to Nigeria, I'm sure there are young Nigerians who are like, why don't you just stay here once you found your way out? It looks like Stanley explained to us what all of you are coming back to do in Nigeria. You want to weigh in on this very quickly.
Okay. Well, I don't know what post you're talking about, but yes, all over. But what do they say? What did Stanley say? What did everybody say? Charity begins at home, right? I think my opinion, what I want to say is that we need to have dissemination of information and bridge that line between the economic sustainability and the micro system, because I'm more focused on the micro and the youths. Okay, I'm watching right now on TV station, there's this big marketplace and farmers and their goods and services, and they're showing the farmers, they're selling. So what will they do with their goods when it goes bad? So if they have that information, like online banker breaks things down to the layman. If you have a tomato farm and you take it to the market, you sell a truckload and you have five truckloads left and they go bad, what do you do with that? But when you have the information and education that you can take those tomatoes and make tomato paste or ketchup or other goods, you're increasing that value chain. And that is what we lack here, the dissemination of information, because people don't bother because they don't have that link. I personally, when I started watching the online broker, I learned a lot about banking. I didn't used to go into the bank because to me, it's a waste of time. You go to the bank, you spend 3 hours there and nothing gets done. Not trying to call any banks out, but that's the reality. So we need that dissemination of information. And talking about going abroad and coming back, the grass is always greener. You have a house in Canada, but is that house on mortgage? Are you working 5 jobs a day to meet your mortgage payment? Like Dr. Amon said, if you don't pay, that house will be taken away from you in one day. Do you understand? And Yinka is in Europe, but he's also here in Nigeria. And digital information, we're all in different parts of the continent, but we're on Zoom. So digital information, they're online trainings, 1 week. You don't need to go to college for 4 years. 1 week, 2 days, 3 days, you can get certification. And so we need just that dissemination of information.
Absolutely. Lady and gentlemen, we can keep on and on, but we have to go. So I'm going to just take one final thought in 30 seconds from each person. So who's going first?
Well, here's what I'm going to say. For us to have an inclusive economy, we must increase the prospects and the opportunities for everyone. Everyone must be included. Everyone is a stakeholder in the community, in their businesses, and it is very vital. But we also have to relook at how we create these and the value that comes with it. So value is important and resilience is important for us to create these kinds of inclusive economy. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Amma.
I think, yeah, just to go to start with the topic, which is about creative inclusivity. I think that creative inclusivity is such a great topic, and I think that that should be the focus. If we focus on creativity rather than focus on money, we will find that we are serving, right? It's really the driving force behind Africa's economic transformation by empowering all stakeholders. And if we can empower and enforce more creativity, then we will get more burner boys and we'll get more whiz kids. And ultimately, we're not just going across the pond, right? We're global. That's really for me, there's no limit. We become global, not just limited.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Egoke. Online banker.
So I would say we are looking for sustainability. The more we can lower the barriers to entry, the more we can make information accessible, the more people can know, especially the youth that realize that they are the future. You know, when they tell them that they are the future, they need to believe that and they need to see that it's workable. Show them workable examples that they need to just persevere for a bit and they can create what they're looking for outside. They can get that in a number of years in Nigeria and have it in abundance and be able to export it and become even global superstars selling some of those things. But what we need to realize is that inclusion that we're looking out for, we need to lower the barriers. We need to get more people in there. We need to have an ecosystem where everybody, where, you know, like in technology, they call it network effect, where an additional member of the group is adding value to the group without, you know, the initial person. So what it does is that everyone keeps contributing their own quota, and that's how people rise. And that's what the sustainability is about. I think that's the future, and we should hold that. I'm betting on Africa, and I'm sure everyone should bet on that too.
Can I just add very quickly, because I started off speaking about the sustainable goals, and I just want to just read very quickly goal number 8, decent work and economic growth to promote sustained, inclusive and sustainable economic growth, full and productive employment and decent work for all. I think in a nutshell, it puts everything into one nugget for us to know that we may not be achieving it by 2030, but if we can look at some of those strands, the potential is there And as everyone has said today, we have to just take it in chunk size, bit size, and continue to empower and grow. So before we leave, if I could just ask Stanley, please, can you just let everybody know what your social media handle is? Because we want them to follow you and learn all the little nuggets that you deliver on a daily, almost daily basis.
My social media handles are Online Banker, one word, Online Banker on Instagram, on TikTok, on Facebook. And then on Twitter, I think even on LinkedIn is Online Banker. And then on Twitter is Your Online Banker, You Are Online Banker. But I'm most active on Instagram and on TikTok.
Thank you so much. And Yinka, would you please share the social media platforms for Africa Sustainable Trade?
Thank you very much again. So on all platforms, we're on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and there's one more, Facebook, all Africa Sustainable Trade.
And I must say, this has been a very invigorating conversation. I do hope that we'll have a chance to come back again and speak. Thank you so much to our guest and to all those who have been with us live. We hope that it has been a rewarding interaction with us. We look forward to seeing you again next week with another invigorating conversation. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Thank you.
This has been a Thinking Reimagined podcast.
The executive producer is Dr. Amma. Co-producer, Peter Ammon Boyle.
The podcast is edited by Nelken, and it is moderated by Nifemi Oguntoyin.
Thinking Reimagined emphasizes the importance of transformational conversations, which have as their aim the bringing about of the rich diversity of thoughts and, most importantly, powerful and applicable effective solutions and change.
The views, opinions, and contributions of the panelists are exclusively theirs and do not reflect the opinions of Thinking Reimagined producers or personnel. Thank you for listening,
and we hope you have enjoyed this episode.
We invite you to subscribe to Thinking Reimagined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and other outlets.
We look forward to presenting another riveting episode next week.
Thinking Reimagined Podcasts is produced by Live Abundantly.
We welcome your thoughts and invite you to visit our website, livesabundantly.com.
Or you can follow us on social media on Live Abundantly 8.
Thinking Reimagined, changing the mindset for a better global society.